Georgia's DBHDD is urging people to ask a pharmacist about getting naloxone for their first aid kits at home or work. No prescription is needed. Naloxone can rapidly reverse an opioid overdose and restore breathing. Opioidresponse.info.
Time for another Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nygut. As always, I'm very glad you're all with us for our show today, April 7th, 2021. Before we introduce the panel and get started on today's topics, I just very briefly want to thank so many of you who connected with me one way or the other through email. And by the way, I always welcome emails, bnigut, B-N-I-G-U-T, at gpb.org, or through our Twitter account, PoliticsGPB, Facebook, whatever. And many of you really appreciated the fact that we spent yesterday's show breaking down the highlights of the election law and trying to give you a pretty clear picture of what the law will do, but on the other hand, will not do to change how Georgians vote, how votes are processed, who's in control of elections. And it's the sort of thing that we really feel is well-suited for Political Rewind. So I'm very grateful to all of you who contacted me to say it helped you understand aspects of the law better. And given that it was a 98-page document, there's no way we could address each and every aspect of the law, but we did our best to break down the major points, and we'll continue to talk about the many aspects of the law in the weeks and months ahead. All that said, the election law continues to be the dominant political story here in Georgia and across the country, and so we're going to start the show talking about it with our panel. I'm very happy that it's Wednesday because it means that my AJC partner on this show is Greg Bluestein, one of the hardest working political reporters I have ever known in my many, many years covering politics. Hey, Greg, how are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. We should remind people, because I know they've heard this on the show, you're in the middle of writing your book about the 2022 election, 2020 election. How's that coming?
Not 2022 yet. That's next.
Yeah.
I'm sending in my second section, so about 200 pages overall, into the editor, hopefully tomorrow.
Well, congratulations on that. We're excited for you and look forward to the day when it will be published and we'll be able
so
to talk
I.
about it. I'll bet you do. Kyle Hayes is back with us today. Kyle, of course, is the man behind Peach Pod, which, if you haven't listened to it yet, it's a terrific podcast about Georgia politics. Kyle grew up in Georgia, went to the University of Georgia, now works for a public policy think tank based out of Washington. But Kyle, you continue to be very involved in looking at Georgia politics. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I can't leave Georgia behind, and it's great to be back with y'all.
You said before the show went on the air, you're starting work on a podcast in which you're going to try to sum up the legislative session and the important things that came out of it, right?
Yeah, we waited a little bit for some of the dust to settle on the final issues that got debated, and we're going to talk about some of that news today on your show, and we'll break it down more on Peach Pod later this week.
Okay, so you all might want to check out Peach Pod. It's really worth your while. One of the people that Kyle has interviewed more than once for Peach Pod, Nabila Islam, is with us today as well. Nabila was a candidate for the Democratic nomination for Congress up in the 7th District and is working as a Democratic strategist. Nabila, how's life for you right now? You're working right now on issues related to voter turnout, making sure that 2022 works well, right, in terms of you're getting Democrats out to the polls.
Correct. My organization, Turnout Democrats, will be helping with those efforts. And it's great to be back. I appreciate you having me back on.
Sure. We're very happy to also welcome Megan Hansen to Political Rewind. Megan, former state representative from Brookhaven, and is now, has been, and is working as an attorney And Megan, you work with an organization that looks at the law and public policy from a more conservative point of view, I think is fair to say, right?
I would say it's nonpartisan, to be correct. It is a tort reform group, lawsuit reform, to make sure that we don't see just exorbitant amounts of frivolous lawsuits here in Georgia.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Megan. We're glad to have you join us. Greg Bluestein, the latest news in terms of the All-Star baseball game, which really was a turning point, I think, in terms of people's really looking carefully at how businesses out there were going to deal with the Georgia election law. They've now announced Coors Field in Denver will be the site of the game. And whether it was intentional or not, we know that Colorado has some election laws that make it particularly easy for people to vote by mail. And so we're speculating, but we might imagine that Major League Baseball realized that when they chose Denver as the site.
Yeah, that's a good that is a good speculation, and there's other reasons too. I mean, Denver had already been in the hunt for an All-Star game, had already prepared plans to recruit an All-Star game next year or the year after. So there's already at least a process in place there. But of course, too, the symbolic switch to a state that has much more expansive mail-in voting regulations, I think, was probably a symbolic message as well to Georgia.
So I want to go around and ask you all a very basic question. And Kyle, I'll start with you and then go Kyle, Megan, and then Nabila. Kyle, how significant from either, and we're going to talk about the business aspect of the All-Star game being moved, but how significant is this loss to Georgia? Is it important from a business point of view? Is it important more for the optics of this rebuke of the state's election law? How do you view the All-Star game now being played in Denver?
I think it's significant from a politically symbolic perspective, and I'm actually seeing a lot of calls back to the North Carolina governor's race in 2016 when they had a bill targeting transgender people in that state. And it brought not only a lot of pushback from businesses, but it brought sports events leaving the state for other places. Baseball, obviously one of, you know, the prized sports possessions of Georgia fans. And it also, it keeps this issue in the news continuously and adds yet another aspect to this criticism about a restrictive voting law. And I'm a little bit unclear why Governor Kemp wants to continue the focus on this issue.
Well, we're going to talk about that in the show today, so I'm glad you teed that up. Megan, what's interesting to me about MLB's decision here is they are not exactly looked at as one of the more liberal organizations in professional sports. They've always been relatively conservative in and staying out of politics. The PGA has said, Professional Golf Association, we're not moving. We're going to still play our big tournament out at East Lake. So it is interesting that MLB decided to stick its toe in the hot water of this election law.
Well, and, you know, interestingly enough, I think Marco Rubio tweeted out the other day that the chairman of the MLB, who is a member at Augusta National, did not pull his membership. So I think this is all about kind of perspective and what the statement is that they're trying to make. I actually have a couple questions for the MLB in that, you know, is there some sort of ulterior motive here? Because not only are Georgia businesses going to lose, you know, $100 million is what the number that's been anticipated and put out there in the public, but that does not include whatever the Braves are going to lose. And I mean, I don't know this, you know, maybe this gets too far into the weeds, but Freddie Freeman's contract is up at the end of this year. Are, you know, were they anticipating that, or were the Braves anticipating that that extra funds, that extra revenue from the All-Star game to be able to sign one of our top All-Stars? And are we going to be able to do that now in the future? So did this, what I would consider a pretty rash decision by the MLB, did they just affect the future of the Braves for the next, you know, 5 or so years to come?
Oh, Oh, Nabila, Megan, clearly a Braves fan. We just got insight about her understanding of the Braves. Nabila?
I think it's unfortunate that Georgia loses any economic activity, but I understand why the MLB made this decision. And honestly, the Republicans brought it upon themselves. I mean, like, backlash was to be expected. I mean, and you can look back on history and what happened in North Carolina, as Kyle brought up, with the bathroom bill. A lot of folks did boycott the state. And so I think, we're probably going to see more businesses, I'm anticipating more businesses possibly boycotting this bill and by not doing business there. And I think it's because of the Republican leadership in signing this bill into law.
So, Greg, we talked about this on the show the other day, but it's worth bringing up again today. One of the reasons that I think MLB felt it was in a tough spot here is this was the game in which they were going to honor Hank Aaron, a longtime advocate of civil rights, racial justice. And so I think maybe that added layer had some impact on their thinking about this, yes?
It did, which is another reason why I think some people thought it would go to Milwaukee, because Hank Aaron played in Milwaukee for about as long as he played in Atlanta. Not longer. But you're right, there's a symbolic level to this. Also, there was an enormous national pressure on this event, because everyone knew the Masters was not going to pull out of Georgia so close to the event. And also the PGA has a long record of kind of staying out of these political debates. Whereas MLB's 30 billionaire owners, who are mostly Republican, by the way, didn't really get a say in this. It was the MLB commissioner look back just a few days before the decision, President Biden even opined on it and said baseball should consider moving. You had African-American and star players saying on the record that MLB should consider moving the All-Star game. And you had the head executive of the Players Union kind of opening the debate on this by saying that he was open to moving the All-Star game. So there's a lot of pressure, not just from national political figures, but internally, that I think the MLB commissioner had to deal with.
So, Greg, Kyle raised a good question, and while the ball's in your court, let me start with you on this. Governor Kemp, like, by the way, Mitch McConnell in the U.S. Senate, have decided that they're more than willing to go to war with Major League Baseball, with Delta Airlines, with the Coca-Cola Company, with UPS, with all of the businesses that have criticized in no uncertain terms, this Georgia election law. And I thought Kyle asked a good question. What's in it for Governor Kemp to wage this battle? He was really harsh in the news conference that he gave last Saturday morning, I think, in condemning the companies and MLB for taking the actions they did.
Yeah, what's in it for Governor Kemp is a chance to rally the Republican base at a moment where he needs to rally the Republican base. We've talked for months about all the problems he has with his own party's base because of former President Donald Trump's pressure, infatuation, obsession with Georgia's election, and his view that Kemp didn't do enough to overturn the results in his behalf. So this is a chance to rally the same pro-Trump crowd to get Republicans on the same page and to be the champion for this issue, even if it hurts him in the general election, right? And we have no idea how big of an issue this will be at this time. This is a moment where Republicans are mostly on the same page, although you still have Trump is still not letting it go, and you still have Trump sending two statements out consecutively attacking this bill for being not strong enough.
Yeah, I mean, Brian Kemp cannot catch a break. Megan. It is interesting that this has seemed, we've said this on the show, that in many ways, Democrats, who, by the way, here in Georgia have been sort of had mixed response. Nabila is an example of this, to MLB pulling out. Nobody's happy that Cobb County, the state's going to lose business. But this was, in many ways, handing Brian Kemp on a platter an opportunity to reunite the Republican base that had become so disenchanted with him because he refused to support the president's claims of fraud in Georgia, right, Megan?
Well, there's a lot to unpack here, Bill.
Sure.
The first thing I'll say is that if you think that, or if anybody thinks, not anybody here, but if anybody thinks that Governor Kemp standing up for the truth and for what is actually in that bill is going to rally the Republican base, well, I love that notion, that our Republican base is going to rally around truth. And, you know, quite frankly, in my opinion, this whole effort has been one giant fundraising ploy for Stacey Abrams. And, you know, you'll see that with the $500,000 that her new Georgia Voter Project got a donation from. I mean, she's been fundraising this from day one. So the only one who's really made this political has been Stacey Abrams. I mean, Brian Kemp wasn't even, it's my understanding, wasn't even a part of the negotiations of this bill. So to try and put this on him, it's kind of comical, to be honest, or to try and say that he's trying to do anything political with this bill when they handed it, the legislature gave it to him and the man signed it, which is his job.
Nabila?
I think the folks that are making this political are the black and brown working people that will be disenfranchised because of this new law. I think that, you know, I think it's really funny that the Kemp administration seems to think that MLB pulling out is going to unify the GOP base. I mean, look, Brian Kemp is no one without Donald Trump. In fact, Donald Trump made Brian Kemp. And so with, you know, Trump coming out with his statement that this bill didn't do enough, his base is, you know, still loyal to Donald Trump. So I don't think it helps him. And his internal polls are showing that he's flailing right now. And I think he's just trying to throw anything at the wall and see what sticks.
Okay, so wait, Kyle, I want to try to make sure we focus the conversation here on just on the fallout to this new law. And while Megan says that she thinks that Governor Kemp would not use the anger that some businesses have expressed over the law for political purposes, whether he does it intentionally or not, it did hand Republicans an opportunity to unite. And instead, just let me read it, Donald Trump's statement, Georgia's election reform law is far too weak and soft to ensure real ballot integrity. Governor Brian Kemp and Georgia Secretary of State should have eliminated no excuse, widespread mass mail-in voting, gotten rid of the dangerous unsecure drop boxes. And he goes on and on. He says Kemp also caved to the radical left wing's woke mob who threatened to call him racist if he got rid of weekend voting. Well, he kept it, and they still call him racist. Kyle, this does not suggest that Republicans are united in how they're dealing with all that's going on around this law.
Well, and to me, it raises my skepticism of the continued focus on this issue and his communications efforts. Bill, you mentioned that he did that Saturday press conference. He also did a media blitz, largely targeted at a bunch of conservative media outlets, Fox News, The Blaze, Newsmax, Eric Erickson. And to me, there's an opportunity cost here of continuing to focus on this issue when you may not be able to please former President Trump and his backers. You're going to keep progressives and Democrats engaged in opposition to this law, and you lose the opportunity to talk about some of the things that I would think probably Speaker Ralston would prefer Republicans talk about, like reforming citizens' arrest or using federal money to fund teacher bonuses, part of this teacher pay thing Governor Kemp consistently talks about, increasing adoption credits. When you hear Speaker Ralston talk about the success of Republicans in the state, he's often focusing on issues like those. But the oxygen is completely taken out of the room when you're focused on this very polarizing voting bill. And I think that's to Kemp's political detriment.
Look, the governor seems to be spoiling for this fight. This is something that, look, his most immediate concern is the primary next year. He's got President Trump still promising to rally behind a primary opponent. The general election is more distant. So this is something that gives he and his supporters something to latch on to. This is something you're going to continue to see him focus on. He'll sign the citizens' arrest overhaul. He'll sign, you know, measures that have more consensus, that are more kind of feel-good measures that the Democrats and Republicans can both cheer. But you know, there's a reason he's done 40 media interviews on this in the last week. This is because this is his moment right now. He's trying to maximize it. He's trying to wall off any sort of attempt at a Republican primary challenge, because there's names out there. Vernon Jones is one of them. Burt Jones is another. But we still, Doug Collins is talking more about running for Senate than he is for governor now. So his chances right now, at least, for surviving a primary challenge seem to be greatly solidified and increased because of this bill right now. And who knows what will happen the next few weeks, months. But right now, his standing certainly seems improved in the Republican caucus.
You know, at the same time, Megan, Cobb County released a statement saying that they anticipate a loss of revenues of some $100 million as a result of losing the All-Star game. And obviously, we know that Cobb County has become a has gone through a shift to become a Democratic county. It voted for Joe Biden in big numbers, but there are still questions as to whether it will necessarily remain Democratic or not. And although I'm sure nobody was thinking about this in specific detail, it is sort of it does smart for the folks up there, again, now having turned more Democratic, to lose this major opportunity to showcase the county and to make some money.
Yes, I mean, that absolutely is an unfortunate situation. And again, I wish the MLB had not succumbed to cancel culture. I mean, but that it is what it is. And now we have real Georgians suffering, and, you know, they're losing lost wages and tips. And it's unfortunate.
Okay, Kyle, Megan used the term cancel culture, which obviously is has been introduced into our political vernacular by Republicans. And so let me ask you about cancel culture when it comes to the response that some Republicans have had to what's happened with the businesses that are upset about the new election law. We now have members of the state legislature who have told the Coca-Cola company, we don't want your Cokes anymore. You know, Coca-Cola has been supplying legislator offices for many, many years with free Cokes for themselves, for the people who come, voters who come to talk to them, that sort of thing. And now we have Republicans there saying, we don't want your Coca-Colas. We had David Ralston very conspicuously pop open a can of Pepsi at Sine Die on the 40th day of the session. Is cancel culture really, in fact, the providence of one party as opposed to both?
I think both parties can engage in seeking accountability for things that they don't like. But I think sort of digging beyond just the surface level stuff of whether you've got a can of Coke or a can of Pepsi in your hand, I'm interested in some of the downstream effects of if corporate interests see, particularly in a changing state like Georgia, that the winds of political power may be changing. How does that impact the way that they approach funding campaigns, which candidates that they support? You know, it's interesting that in the jolt yesterday, there was a couple of companies, I think Patagonia was one, that's donating money to Black Voters Matter and the New Georgia Project, funding a political issue that Stacey Abrams has organized her politics around for the last decade or so. And so beyond the symbolic stuff, I'm interested of how corporations approach sort of the substantive issues in politics and whether that changes who they look to support and how that changes the political makeup of our state.
So, Nabila, I'm sure Megan would suggest that the Patagonia give was $1 million or more, Greg Bluestein, I think they're giving to these organizations, would suggest that this is an example of Stacey Abrams and her organizations taking advantage of the controversy over the new law to raise money, Nabila.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is an example of Republicans implementing a law that's going to repress, prevent people from voting. And so a lot of these corporations are, well, Patagonia first, they're putting their money where their mouth is. and you know, supporting organizations that are directly going to combat voter suppression. And I think that more corporations should fall in line and you know, support these initiatives and cancel donations, corporate PAC donations to Republicans that support such bills.
Greg, Mitch McConnell, the minority leader now, of course, in the U.S. Senate, yesterday said that businesses that either boycott Georgia or criticize in an overt way Georgia over the new law are going to face serious consequences. That was his quote. We don't exactly know what those consequences might be, but I think many people picked up on the fact that in criticizing them, McConnell also said, well, we want them to stay out of politics, but that doesn't mean we want them to stop contributing to candidates.
Yeah, it's an act of hypocrisy, especially with his stance on Citizens United. But look, we already know in Georgia what a sample of that backlash would be, because the Georgia House, right before the final gavel on sunny day, passed an effort to rescind a lucrative tax break for Delta. It didn't end up passing in the Senate, so it didn't become law. But you know, the leaders, legislative leaders I talked to say that they also, just like Brian Kemp, just like Governor Kemp, felt blindsided by Delta in particular. And it seems like Delta will be losing its seat at the table, because, you know, you got to remember, these giant companies, they might not opine on every big issue, but they have a seat at the policy discussion about taxes, about infrastructure projects, about major Georgia programs. And it just seems like in the direct aftermath that Delta and Coke will be losing that seat at the table in Georgia.
Megan?
I mean, to be honest, I highly doubt that that's the case. But I mean, all of this goes back to the inordinate amount of pressure that Stacey Abrams and the Democrats are putting on these companies based on the lies that are being kind of amplified everywhere from MSNBC.
Wait, I want to interrupt you. I'm sorry. I need to interrupt you because that's a strong statement. Help us understand what you believe to be a lies about the Georgia election law. That's really an important thing to look at.
Sure. The mantra, well, first off, the talking points never changed when the bill did change. The talking points were basically the same, that it was restrictive, overly restrictive for ballot access. It was going to limit the hours that voters would be able to go and cast their ballot, that it was going to be from 7 to 5. Well, it was, you know, it is 7 to 7, just as it is now. The talking points from the liberals never seemed to change, despite the fact that the bill actually did change, and it did become, you know, increased amount of time to do early voting, and it actually legalized the fact that there were ballot boxes, whereas before there, you know, that was not actually in the law. So it, in my opinion, has increased access to the ballot, not decreased access to the ballot. And I, quite frankly, never hear specifics where it has decreased access to the ballot. I just continue to hear, this is an oppressive bill, this is an oppressive bill, and people can't have water in line, which, I mean, we can talk about that too.
I don't want to relitigate the show that we did yesterday. I do want to respond, and Greg, maybe you'll help me here. In fact, the early voting, I think it's early voting, or maybe it's just runoff voting. You'll correct me, Greg. In fact, the new law does say that polling places can be open from 7 until 5, but at the discretion of a given county, they can extend those hours beyond the normal, or actually it says 9 to 5, the workday.
It says 9 to 5.
But that a given county can extend. So the law does allow for a county that wants to shorten the amount of time that a person can vote. I just want to make sure that we're talking about what the law actually does. But I would certainly say, Megan, you make a point when you say things like no excuse absentee voting, great, pulled out of the bill. And some people have continued to condemn the legislation because they think perhaps it's still in there, or that it underlay what the motives were of the people. But there are things about the bill that I think we do have to talk about in terms of where it does and doesn't restrict voting. Greg, and we got to get to it.
Yeah, Yeah, and real quick, this is what Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan says about when he says Republicans fell into the trap on this, because when the Georgia Senate passed a much more restrictive election law that would have severely limited who could vote by mail and restricted some weekend voting, that has been conflated in the minds of many with what this bill does. And there's still a number of restrictions, period, point blank. But it does not go as far as that earlier version did.
All right. I know, Nabila, you want to weigh in, but I'm so late for break. Let me get to it. We'll come back with more on Political Rewind.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Greg Bluestein, Megan Hansen, Nabila Islam, and Kyle Hayes join me on Political Rewind today. Before we go back to our conversation, a quick program note. I'm really looking forward to our show tomorrow. We're going to be talking with Heather McGee. Heather McGee is the chair of Color of Change. She worked for many years at Demos, looking at racial justice through the lens of the economy. So she's an expert on the economy, and she's now written a new book called The Sum of Us, in which she argues that the way we really need to address racism is not by how, in fact, it may disadvantage people of color, but how, in fact, virtually every racist policy or action, in fact, affects everyone, white people as well as black people. So Heather McGee and Dr. Ander Gillespie will join me for that conversation, so I hope you'll be with us. Nabila, I want to move on, but I want to give you a chance, because you didn't get to respond to a bunch of what was said during that last segment.
I did want to say that it's not unusual for corporations to weigh in on voting rights legislation or voting legislation that's being passed. If we look back to, I wanted to bring up an example in 2006 when President Bush was passing renewing the Voting Rights Act, and we had some Southern senators that were opposing. You know, corporations like Coca-Cola, Walmart, Pfizer, Walt Disney, they weighed in. So it's not unusual for corporations to say something. And so I think what's happening now is, you know, in line with what's happened in the past. Also, to touch base on what was just said previously about, you know, that there are lies around the new law that will suppress votes for black and brown and working people. I mean, this legislation was built on the lies that Donald Trump said that there was rampant fraud, but we found nothing in the Senate runoff. We found nothing in the general election. Why is this legislation needed now? When it came to absentee voting, it's now required that you need a driver's license number, and if you don't include it, you risk getting your ballot rejected. Why are we preventing counties or different organizations from mailing out absentee ballot forms? I mean, like, we're banning counties. If another pandemic happens, we have banned counties from actually mailing out absentee ballot request forms to voters. Why is that happening? I mean, there's many things in this bill that is just ridiculous.
Go ahead, Megan.
I just want to say one thing. You know, the beauty of this bill is that it makes each county's do uniform. DeKalb County may be able to afford something different from Daugherty County. It's not fair that DeKalb County could mail out ballots, whereas another county can't afford to do that. So we have to make sure that every voter has access, the same access as other voters in other counties.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I really, as I said, we have spent an enormous amount of time on this show breaking down this bill. And we've heard from Republicans and Democrats their varying points of view. I thought yesterday we tried our best to sort of say, here's what is reality as opposed to the various spins about the bill. And I really would rather not we spend the rest of the show doing that, if you'll all go with me on that today. Because, Kyle, I want to go back to something you said that I thought was incredibly important. And You know, we can talk about no water at the polls, which is, you know, it's a humanitarian issue, I suppose, but it certainly isn't one of the most important aspects of this. We can talk about how the people like the minority leader in the U.S. Senate and Governor Kemp and other Republicans are, you know, arguing about not having Coca-Cola in the state capitol anymore, that sort of thing. But you said a really crucial thing in terms of this new Republican battle with businesses, and that is looking at where contributions are going from corporations to candidates for office. And of course, for decades, Republicans have depended on big business to help them raise money because they have always had an alliance.
And I think the first thread you saw in this was some corporations deciding to withhold donations from congressional lawmakers who supported not certifying the election results on January the 6th. The other thing, though, that I think is at play here is Georgia is a state where three Democrats won statewide elected elections in this last race. We're going to have all of our statewide elected officials up in this next race. If your corporation's thinking about how to cement your influence with the people who might get elected, that also might be a consideration as they consider how they direct their campaign resources. And so, you know, I'm not sure that we know from the recent history that Republicans will lose significant corporate contributions, but I think it does open the door to corporations casting a wider net when they seek to influence the political process.
Look, we talked about the rift among Republicans over whether or not this bill goes far enough. There's a rift among Democrats over how to respond to it, because you're certainly seeing activists pushing for boycotts of companies that didn't speak out aggressively enough against this measure. And meanwhile, you're hearing from party leaders and elected officials, including from Stacey Abrams, kind of echoing what Kyle just said, which is calling on companies to speak out in different ways, whether or not it would be public statements, but also withholding donations to Republican lawmakers and groups that have either supported this measure or have echoed former President Trump's falsehoods about lies about rigged elections in Georgia and elsewhere. So you're seeing that rift play out, and it's playing out right now as we speak, because there's supposed to be faith leaders who are supposed to launch a pretty significant boycott of Georgia companies today, and they ended up delaying it for another week, and they're going to be a virtual meeting with all sorts of executives. But the Masters in Augusta becomes the next sort of staging ground, because that is a sporting event that is continuing to play out in Georgia, and there'll be protests there, I think, over the weekend.
So, yeah, I was just going to say, we do expect there will be people out front of the Augusta National Golf Course raising placards against the Georgia voting law. We'll watch how that plays out. One last point on this, and I want to get our second break of the show out of the way fairly quickly. But, Megan, I do wonder, you know, we played on the show the other day Governor Kemp's very strong statement pushing back on the companies that have criticized the law in that news conference. He really did. He seems to be launching a scorched earth campaign against companies that have been good to Republicans, Democrats too, I suppose, to the state, to the city, Coca-Cola, Delta Airlines. And his attacks were as harsh as they might be if he were attacking the Democrats who he uses as targets for a lot of his anger. I'm not sure I get how that benefits the Republican Party in Georgia or anywhere.
Listen, Governor Kemp is standing up for what he believes is the truth. He believes that the bill is a good bill, that it is taking the right measures, that it is expanding voter access. And he is doing what he thinks is right. And, you know, we will see how that plays out. I see lots of positive responses from Republicans of all across the spectrum on my social media. And so he's doing what he thinks is right.
So, Kyle, what's your thought on that?
On whether this is the right move?
And whether the scorched earth sort of attack on business by a Republican leader in the state, what's the point?
I mean, I come back to the opportunity cost, that you're not talking about other issues that have more broad agreement, and that in general, you know, you may find in the polling that voters who are more moderate, that may only lean conservative or lean liberal, like the business-friendly approach to policies that we've had in this state and the stability, the governing stability that's been in place across two parties since the 1990s and through the 2000s. And we have had a different kind of politics here than in a state like Kansas or a state like North Carolina, where conservative activists have driven more aggressive grassroots-focused politics in those states, and there's been backlashes from the electorates there. It's just going to be interesting to see how the electorate reacts here in our state.
Megan, I'm sorry. Nabila, let me give you the last word before I take a break.
You can't take, the Republican Party can't take money from corporations and say it's speech and then complain when those same companies are exercising their free speech. So he's trying to cancel these corporations, these companies from speaking out. And I think it's not going to do them any good. And, you know, in their case, don't bite the hand that feeds you.
All right. Let's take our final break of the show and come back with more on.
Thanks for listening to Political Rewind. If you like this show, you'll also like Georgia Today. It's a daily podcast from GPB News, bringing you compelling stories and in-depth reporting that you won't hear anywhere else. Join me, Peter Biello, for this quick and convenient way to get the best of GPB News' extensive coverage of the topics that matter to you, delivered directly to your device every weekday afternoon.
Political Rewind. Hey, Greg Bluestein, there's an interesting issue that has got President Biden a little bit behind the eight ball as it relates to Georgia. And it's not one that's gotten an enormous amount of attention, but it is an interesting story about business, politics, and how we deal with the businesses that wanted to come into the state of Georgia. So very quickly, the South Korean company SK Innovations, which makes advanced batteries for electric vehicles, wants to build a $6 billion plant in Georgia. It would employ, I didn't see the exact number, but a couple of thousand Georgia workers.
2,600 workers. Right? Yeah,
2,600. The International Trade Commission, though, has ruled that SK stole trade secrets from a competitor in South Korea, and they therefore do not want the company to be able to build here in Georgia. And it's up to President Biden to decide whether to overrule the International Trade Commission or not, putting him in an interesting spot in a state that he, as a Democrat, won for the first time since a Democrat won in 1992. Greg?
Yeah, this is a tough one for the president, because if he overturns it, he can talk about, boast about saving jobs in a state that he narrowly won. And really also, you know, back up with Republican leaders here who are also hoping to save this transformative project for this part of Northeast Georgia. But throwing this this ruling out would also kind of send a message to the international business community that the U.S. is willing to sort of flout intellectual property laws. So not an easy decision for him, but one that we know in Georgia, state officials and local officials are watching very closely, because 2,600 jobs in Northeast Georgia is a game changer.
Yeah, Kyle, Governor Kemp and other state leaders obviously have urged the president to overrule ITC and allow this plant to be built here.
Yeah, and it's a particularly challenging decision, I think, specifically for Joe Biden. He was somebody who ran as a strong defender of international institutions and laws and norms that govern international affairs. But I do kind of think that those concerns are going to fall by the wayside when it comes not only to saving jobs in a swing state, but also to jumpstarting American investments in engineering electric batteries that are going to be important for transitioning the U.S. auto fleet away from gas engines as a part of the fight against climate change.
Nabila?
I think we've been so used to how the Donald Trump administration would do politics, where if you're a red state, you would get certain benefits, and if you're a blue state, you would get some things that were taken away from you. I don't think that we should make this into a political game. I trust the administration to talk to the experts. But you shouldn't be making decisions based on what's going to be best for you in an election. You should do what's best for the American people.
So I wonder about that that way of framing it, Megan. I mean, after all, this is an issue of jobs on one hand and the protection of intellectual property on the other. So it really is a tough decision that I'm not sure I would quite agree with Nabila's characterization of it.
Well, actually, I was going to compliment Nabila, and she's 100% right. This should not be a political game. In fact, this is one example of where President Trump's America First policies benefited all Americans. This should be an absolute no-brainer. This is a $2.6 billion plant here in Georgia with 2,600 jobs. And it's until the ITC wants to systematically enforce these trademark issues to all countries, like China, then why would the United States be the only one who has to adhere to these international standards?
Okay, but Nabila, as Kyle pointed out, President Biden, in a direct rebuke of Donald Trump's administration, has said repeatedly he would honor international treaties. He believed the United States need to be part of a global economy, a global society. And so this does sort of put him in a difficult position, Nabila.
I see the way that you're explaining it. Yes, I can see that. If he made a decision based on, electoral wins, then okay, I can see him having this weigh on him. But again, I think he should have integrity to what he said and then just rely on the experts of his team to guide him on what's the best course.
We'll watch how that plays out. I did want to give it a little time because it's been a pretty big issue for the people in the Northeast Georgia who want this plant up there. Greg, with the little time we have remaining, Georgia congressional Democrats are now urging President Biden to permanently do away with the Medicaid waiver that Governor Kemp got from the Trump administration, which would essentially put a worker service requirement in place for Medicaid. It would expand the number of people eligible for Medicaid by a very small number, 50,000 or so. But the Biden administration has put it on hold, and now the congressional Democrats are saying, don't bring it back. Greg?
Yeah, remember, this is the waiver that the Trump administration approved in November of last year. So right before his term expired, it got approval. It was almost immediately put indefinitely on hold. And what congressional Democrats say is, look, in part of the stimulus relief plan that passed was also a $1 billion-plus sweetener. I think it was $2 billion overall that was put in there to encourage Georgia and other states that have not yet expanded Medicaid to pay the entire price of that expansion for the first few years. So they're encouraging Georgia to go ahead with it. We saw a vote in the House, sort of a test vote on expanding Medicaid, and of course failed along party lines. So there's still some deep opposition among Republicans, but you're still seeing a slight increase, a slight momentum for Republicans who say, it's time to at least address this issue and get the cost savings overall that at least the supporters think that they're going to get by expanding Medicaid.
Megan, there are few issues upon which Republicans have found that kind of a hill to die on here in Georgia that are more significant to them, I think, than not expanding Medicaid to all Georgians. Their argument being, in the long run, while the feds are paying for it now, in the long run, we'd end up having to pick up the bill and it's just too much money. Yeah?
Listen, the merits of Medicaid expansion aside, what is the bigger issue to me is that this is just another example of big government and federal overreach into Georgia, telling Georgia what we can and can't do and how we want to do it. And I mean, it started with H.R. 1. with the sweeping federal legislation election overhaul. Then it continued with the COVID relief bill when the federal government told Georgia that we could not pass along tax relief to our citizens. And now we have the federal government telling Georgia that we're going to have to potentially expand Medicaid. I mean, this is just okay. Continued overreach.
Okay, we're down about the last 2 minutes. I do want to point out that the feds have said that Georgia, in fact, can go ahead with their tax relief plan, which is one of the reasons that it came out of the legislature. But it's true that the COVID relief bill was putting restrictions in place for states around the country on tax breaks. Nabil, I'm going to give you, we're really short on time, but I want to give you just a second on this.
Sure. I think we should just stop playing politics with people's lives and give everyone health care. Health care is a human right. And right now, Georgians are currently dying and not seeking care because they can't afford care. I think that's the real tragedy here, and that we should go ahead and expand Medicaid. Kemp's current plan literally costs more and covers less people. It makes no sense. We need to just go ahead and take advantage of what's being given to us and expand Medicaid, which would cover about 500,000 Georgians.
All right. Nabila, you get the last word on today's Political Rewind. Greg Bluestein, thank you for being with me. Nabila Islam, Megan Hansen, and Kyle Hayes. One quick note I want to mention. You are, on average, the youngest panel that we have had on this show, I think, ever. And we love that. We love hearing voices of younger Georgians, Georgia leaders, talking about politics. So thank you very much for being part of the show. We're back tomorrow with Heather McGee of Color of Change, her book, The Sum of Us, How Racism Really Hurts All of Us in the Long Run, Economically as Well as Socially. Until then, I'm Bill Nygut. Take care. Stay healthy. Of course, continue wearing your mask and get a vaccine for COVID if you haven't done it so far. Take care, everybody.